Desai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. Today, we are in the sixth chapter of Prema Vahini. Along with me, like in every episode of this program, we have Brother Sai Prakash. Brother Aman Javedi was supposed to be with us, but because of an emergency in the hostel, he could not be with us. But we take on from the discussions that we had with him the last three episodes when we were discussing chapter 5 of Prema Vahini. So let's begin by listening to what Bhagwan has written in the first few lines of chapter 6.
Manava Kartavyam. Naitika Jeevitamulo Manavudu Tana Kartavya Karmala Dwara Hrudayamalinyamunu Kadigiveyutaku Prayatninchavalanu. అట్టి యత్నమును సలుపుచుండగా తాను అలసిపోవు సమయం ఒకటి వచ్చును. అప్పుడు, ఓ పరమాత్మ, నా ప్రయత్నం ఇంతకు మించి పోకున్నది. నాకు శక్తిని బలమును మరికొంత ప్రసాదించుము అని ప్రార్థించవలెను.
ఇన్ హిస్ రెగ్యులర్ లైఫ్ మ్యాన్ షుడ్ స్ట్రైవ్ టు వాష్ అవే ద బ్లెమిషెస్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ హార్ట్ త్రూ హిస్ యాక్షన్స్ అండ్ డ్యూటీస్. వెన్ హీస్ సో ఎంగేజ్డ్, there might come a time when he is tired. Then he should pray thus: O Lord, I am not able to exert beyond this. Grant me some more strength and energy, please.
So that is the 6.1 paragraph of chapter 6. And Sai Prakash, as we reflect on this, I think there are so many instances in our lives, isn't it, when you try to do a particular thing and then you feel that you have already stretched yourself so much. And you look for divine benediction, you look for divine strength, you look for divine grace for making it happen.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure everybody goes through that. And more often than not, we go through such situations in our daily activities, yes, rather than in our pursuit yes, for divinity or exactly, in our pursuit to feeling His love and presence. It's often when your boss has been nasty to you or you've had a heavy day at office,
yes,
and you are working and then you have to take care of children at home.
Yes.
And you are running between jobs.
Yes.
So many things.
Yes.
It's funny because people, they convince themselves that they don't have a way out, that they have to continue doing that. And I'm sure people in the cities will immediately connect with what I'm saying, because in spite of the traffic, every day you curse the traffic, every day you curse what's happening, and yes, then every day you have to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And people have accepted it.
Yes.
People have accepted it, yes, and in very frankly, in many cases, there is no choice as yes, well.
In fact, you're talking about traffic. I was just reminded of an anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this guy who is going with his friend,
mm-hmm,
and probably in Bangalore, because in a maddening traffic, mm-hmm, and the traffic jam just does not clear. And so this person, you know, he's just venting out his anger. What happens to all these guys? You know, why do they have, everyone have to come at the same time? And why can't the other guy give a little room? I know all those things, you know, he's finding everything wrong with the road, to the administration, to the political, to the government, to the generations of governments, etc. So it goes on and on. But this guy is, who's on the driver's seat, he's just very calm.
Mm.
Absolutely unperturbed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually, you know, singing a song, and he's like in so much peace, as if he's he's there in a refreshing sauna. You know, he is. So this guy says, "What is this? I mean, I'm venting out so much of frustration, nothing affects you. He says, seer, I have found a very beautiful way of beating the traffic blues. So every time there is a traffic problem, I have decided I'll pray for someone.
Oh, sweet.
I'll pray for one person. So if the traffic delays are longer, then I pray for actually more people. So I have never a problem if the traffic is longer. Then I get to pray. If I'm praying for two friends, tomorrow I'll pray for three friends. Tomorrow I'll pray for the friend's friend. I'll pray for the dog. I'll pray for that animal. I'll pray for everyone. So, well, I think that is one way of, you know, washing away the blemishes. Swami says, you can't have, you can't change anything outside of you, but you can change everything that happens outside, what they do to you, by changing what is inside of you.
Exactly. You know, I had a very kind of, I wouldn't say, it's a funny, just an experience, where when I was with the Discovery Channel for that short spell of 6 months, you know, there, one of my colleagues was a very good friend. So she was, always she used to ask me, how come you're so calm? And how come you're so composed? I mean, doesn't anything agitate you at all? And so I would say, yeah, a lot of things do agitate me. But maybe those things are not what agitate you, possibly. But since we're talking of traffic, so she said, she came in very happy one day to the office and she said, you know what happened today? I said, no, I don't know. Then she said, I was stuck for about 1 hour in traffic. And something which would I could have passed in just about 15 minutes, it took me more than an hour. And then I said, then what, how come you're so happy? Then she said, you know, I thought of one thing. As what? She said, what would Sai have done if he has if he was stuck in this traffic?
Wow.
I said, wow.
Wow.
That's interesting. So she said, how, I mean, I have not seen him getting agitated or angry. What he would have done if he was stuck in traffic? But the real point that Swami is trying to say is that if you are stuck in your pursuit towards God, traffic may be a very simple and easy way to circumvent by praying for others, but or doing just maintaining your calm and explaining to yourself that this is how it is. You just can't avoid
it. Some good music, whatever.
You know,
spend
that
your
is
time.
The point. That is the point. The point is, we think that we cannot escape from a traffic jam, but we think that we can lead our life without pursuing our true self. We think that we actually postpone it. We think, after all, from tomorrow I want to be a good boy. Aray, I mean, okay, yaar, it's okay. I mean, not see, necessarily tomorrow.
See, if another perspective is, if you're not able to deal with the traffic jam, how can we deal with something which is jammed inside?
Absolutely.
Because the inner traffic is lot more convoluted and confounding and complex than a traffic outside. And I think what Bhagwan is here referring to is, you know, man should strive to wash away the blemishes of his heart through the actions and duties. So what Swami is here referring to is, you know, how to remove all that tarnishes our heart. And I think, you know, to me that comes in the form of anger, in the form of desire, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsarya. This is what actually tarnishes your heart. And so here Swami says, yes, when you're trying to do this, there will come a time, many times, when you feel really exhausted. You feel, I've done everything in my capacity. I'm not able to get over this weakness. I'm not able to get over this handicap of mine, which is common, which happens. Because I feel many times that what we achieve, conquering outside of ourselves, something outside of ourselves, is nothing compared to what we achieve when we conquer something inside of ourselves.
True.
Because I feel, see, there are so many distinguished people when you look in the world outside. People who are great in their fields, people whom we look up to for their talents. You know, they might be a great musician, is a great painter, great literator. But sometimes when you look at the other aspect of their life, you mm-hmm. feel that they were not able to conquer a particular thing in their life. A particular weakness haunted them all their life, you mm-hmm. know. They were not able. So even though they achieved, like they climbed the Everest, when mm-hmm. it came to something outside of them,
mm-hmm.
but when it came to something inside of them, it was not that easy. So sometimes it makes me feel that, you know, if we say that we cannot deal with a traffic jam,
mm.
then, you know...
how are we going to deal with the traffic of thoughts?
Thoughts! For how example. Are you going to deal with matters of... which are really, really so complicated, you know?
Very subtle, very subtle. Yeah. So, you know, there was another... just an episode comes to my mind. I was speaking with one of the teachers, lecturers from the Brindavan campus. And he was very, you know... happily and, you know, kind of proudly telling me that for the past 35 years I've been coming to Swami
mm-hmm.
and I have never stepped out of the ashram and had food in any hotel outside.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had food only in the canteen.
Mm-hmm.
I said, it's a big deal. I mean, yes. What's so great about it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, maybe you don't want to spend money having food outside. Or maybe you like the canteen food.
Maybe you have no friends to go out.
Whatever. And okay. you like canteen food.
Yes.
He said, mm-hmm. no, that's not necessarily why. Okay. I asked him, what's the reason? He said, mm-hmm. see, sometimes when you restrict yourself,
mm-hmm.
In your activities in life,
yes.
when you focus yourselves and say, take up a certain, put a certain restriction to your
yes.
senses,
yes.
put a certain restriction on yourself,
yes.
you have no idea the amount of power it gives you,
absolutely.
The amount of control you feel over yourself.
Yes.
And he said, by this one act, I feel so much of control over myself.
Yes.
He said, I feel I have a control over, and it's not that he's given up food, okay?
I know.
For all that we know, he might be going to all the three canteens instead of the ashram.
Yes.
But
yes.
he just decided that
I will not
go out of the ashram and have.
Yeah.
So, this is possibly yeah. one of the ways yes. of, you know, yeah. when you start curtailing
yes.
certain, and I think that also has gone into our rituals when
yes.
people say we fast,
yes.
we do certain puja, we have to observe this,
yes.
we have to observe that, so that consciously when you restrain your senses,
yes.
your body, then there is a better chance of arresting your thoughts.
Yes. In fact, I can relate to that, Saiprakash, because you know, there have been times when I also try to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you try to restrain something.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have figured out is the amount of willpower
yes.
that gets generated in you
mm-hmm.
is actually tremendous. And I think when I read especially Mahatma Gandhiji's life,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is one thing that always hits me. Because
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, if you see from his life, when he decided to do a particular thing,
right.
he just did it. You know, imagine he's leading the freedom struggle of a billion Indians
mm.
and he decides, no, I will not talk on Mondays.
Mm.
There was one particular weekday, mm. he did not mm. talk, you know.
Mm.
So, it's like, it might sound ridiculous. It's like, mm. there are a million people wanting to contact with you. You have to do so much of work. But he says, no, I don't talk.
Mm.
So, once I decide, I decide. And then you people learn to work with him on that day. Everyone else, the whole universe learns to, you know, manage with that particular
resolve.
Yeah, but the moral force, the moral mm. power that one generates, the internal, you unlock something within.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. In fact, that's a great, very great inspiration for us. You know, when I was just reading this first line that Swami said, the blemishes of the heart have to be washed away by a moral life and doing one's duty. I mean, the only thing that comes to mind is in a spiritual life, you start your sadhana with a kind of expectation.
Yes.
And possibly one of the blemishes or one of the handicap that you face is as you evolve, that expectation should not be binding on you. So you have to start doing your sadhana spontaneously. You have to start doing it in such a way that you are not expecting anything in return. I mean, if you're chanting the name of the Lord, and after every 2 minutes you keep seeing your watch, and yes, you say, oh my God, still I've got 3,600 names to finish. I thought I'll finish off 5,000 by this morning. Oh my God, okay, Om Shri Sairam, Om Shri Sairam, Om Shri Sairam. So there is an expectation. You set a target, then you set an expectation. Then you said, okay, if I complete 1 lakh times I've finished chanting this, I'm sure Swami will give me more grace than that person. He has chanted only 50,000 times. So
yeah,
quantifying our yes, sadhana,
yes,
and trying to, you know, have some expectations from it is possibly one of the blemishes. Yes. So what I'm trying to say is,
yes,
maybe at a subtler level, yes, at the initial level, you want to give up anger, jealousy, hatred, or any of your weakness, and you have done your best, you've tried, you've really prayed to the Lord, and still it has not happened. And then Swami says, at that point in time, you can just pray to the Lord, Swami, I have done everything, please make it happen for me.
Yes.
So take that one step, and He will take 100
yes,
steps.
Yes.
But at another level, at a subtler level, the expectation itself has to get dissolved yes, gradually.
In fact, I remember when we had Brother Aman, he once shared how when you do, for example, the Gayatri Japam, you know, many times we begin the Japam thinking, I'm doing the Gayatri Japam so that I can be blessed with this. You know, so that I may be conferred with this opportunity.
Yo-yo-na prachodayat, that you are blessed with illumination.
But many times we do a Gayatri Japa because we want a particular thing, you know. I want, you know, this thing to happen in my family, or right, this thing to happen in my job, or whatever. Which is natural. Most of the time prayers are like that. But he says, you know, instead of we doing the Gayatri Japam so that we can get something out of it, we should do the Gayatri Japam just so that we are ready for whatever Gayatri is willing to give it to
absolutely,
us.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I think that is one perspective. But as you are talking about this, you know, clearing the blemishes of the heart and Swami's grace, I was just reminded of a very beautiful conversation that I had with Mr. Anil Kumar, you know, who was in the Department of Chemistry,
right,
former student
right,
of Bhagwan's University. Not to confuse with Professor Anil Kumar.
Yes.
And so he was, he belongs to the earlier batches of students. And one day in Vrindavan, as Swami came for darshan, in those days, you know, the boys used to just stand. They would not sit outside along with the devotees for darshan. And so when Bhagwan was returning from darshan, so the boys would be standing, and he was actually not standing in the front line. He could have gone to the front line, but he was just standing in the third or fourth row because he said it was a time when he didn't want Swami to see him.
Okay.
He wanted to see Swami, but he didn't want Swami to see him because there were some thoughts which were not good. You see, my mind was not so clear that day. There were many thoughts, which probably Swami will not like. So, he didn't want Swami to see him. And, but Swami went inside. Then the boys followed, because there were just a few boys, so a session did not really start, and Mr. Gangadhar Shetty was there, and Swami just talked to him, and then suddenly Swami looked at him and asked, how are you? He said, I'm fine, Swami. I'm fine. No, 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 how are you? He said, I'm fine, Swami. You know, he just didn't want to pretend that anything is really happening. And then Swami said, no, how is your mind? And he kept quiet. And then Swami said, bamsu jamsu, bamsu jamsu. Swami said, it's all bumps and jumps. Your mind is very unstable. So now he was all caught red handed. There's nothing to, you know, keep away from Swami. And so now he didn't know what to do, hide his face or whatever. And, you know, he is in a very repentant face. He looked at Bhagwan, and Swami said, your mind is very pure. And that gave him a lot of confidence. And so he went a little forward. And then Swami told, see, Swami took the handkerchief. See, look at this handkerchief. And he said, this handkerchief, what is the color now?
White.
Pure white. See, your mind also is like this only. It's pure white. then Swami used the handkerchief. In those days, Swami used to take paan. You know, so Swami wiped his lips, and there was few stain, red stains. Swami said, "Now how is the handkerchief? Slightly dirty. How did it happen? Because I used the handkerchief." Same with your mind. You used your mind, so it got slightly dirty. Okay, then what do you do if your handkerchief becomes dirty? So you give it to the washerman. Same thing. So when your mind gets dirty, what you have to do? Who is the washerman? Give it to God.
So sweet.
He'll come back clean. Always remember, you are pure. Sometimes some things will, some thoughts, you know, he says, that filled me with so much of confidence. He says, you know, I never want to think that, you know, I am impure. Like Swami used to always say, you are Divyatma Swaruplara, you are Prema Swarupra, you are pure. So he says, you know, even if anything happens to the mind, even if some thoughts come which are not good, just learn to give it to Swami. That's it. And get it back from him clean. And because he has the power to clean it. He's the only person who can really clean our mind.
Absolutely.
And the only person who can also look at us and say, no, you are pure. Right. The only person who can see only a true reflection of himself. The only person who can tell us that you are divine. So I feel that is something very beautiful that we all can tell ourselves. If something happens and we feel not so good about ourselves, I think the only thing we should say is we are pure. And as Bhagwan is saying, we just have to go to the Lord and say, Swami, please take care of my mind. Give me some strength, give me some energy. So we'll move on to the next paragraph.
Yes.
మొదట పరమాత్ముడు దూరంగా నిలిచి చూస్తుండెను. ప్రశ్నకు సమాధానం వ్రాయమని శిష్యునకు చెప్పి గురువు దూరంగా వెళ్లి నిలుచుండినట్లే జీవుడు భోగమయ్యే జీవితంలో మునిగి ఉన్నంత వరకు పరమాత్మ దూరంగా నిలబడి ఉండును. జీవుని వల్ల సత్కర్మలు జరుగుతుండగా భగవంతుడు మెల్లమెల్లగా చెంతకు వచ్చును.
ఇనిషియలీ గాడ్ స్టాండ్స్ ఎట్ ఎ డిస్టెన్స్ అండ్ వాచెస్. Just how a teacher, after asking the student to write an answer to a question, stands afar, God too stands apart as long as the jiva or the individual is immersed in worldly pleasures. When good deeds begin to happen through the individual, God slowly starts coming closer to him.
So God stands at a distance and watches, waiting for us to take that first step.
Absolutely. And so much of even the first line in this chapter, Swami says that man should strive to wash away the blemishes of his heart. Of course, heart and mind in this context are the same. Like you have to purify. Chitta Shuddhi, Swami says, purification of the mind is very essential. And you know, one thing which really strikes is that nobody can escape from karma or from action.
Yes.
If there is one thing that you are bound to do, is that is action.
Yes.
You are born, from the time you are born you have to act. And Swami says, actually very beautifully in Dhyanamayini, he says there are only two types of actions: actions that bind and actions that liberate. And it is more your attitude to the actions than the action itself. Of course, the action itself is important. You cannot say, I am killing somebody with complete detachment and therefore... So, as long as you are killing your ego, that's fine. But very beautifully in that, Swami says, and then, of course, in Dhyanavani, he goes on to say, contemplation on the Lord with chanting his name is very important. And, you know, in this context, when you're talking about actions and when you're talking about work, here also in the second paragraph, he says, initially God is just watching. He's seeing what is this person up to. And if his actions start, if he starts sadvinyogam, like Swami used to say, you sanctify your actions. When you start sanctifying your actions by doing seva, then he starts coming closer to you.
Yes.
And I mean, in this context, you just this quote of Swami comes to my mind when you're talking about duty and action. Action and duty, because you act based on what your duty is. That, you know, duty without love is deplorable.
Yes.
Duty with love is desirable. Love without duty is divine.
Yes.
Love without... So I think it's a gradation. It's absolutely a gradation of moving from what is deplorable to what is desirable to what is divine.
Wonderful. In fact, I had an experience when I was a student. You know, it was vacation time. And perhaps I was in first year under graduation or maybe 12th class. And I generally used to not go during winter vacations. You know, only summer I used to go. And after I went home, you know, something caught on. And, you know, I had not watched TV for so long and all that. So I got glued to the TV. And I remember that first 15 days or 20 days, I was like watching all the time and watching so many things, good, not good. You know, at that age, your mind wanders a lot. And somehow I didn't feel good after about 15, 20 days. I just felt that, you know, I have to do something about it. And in our place, actually, there was a tradition that, you know, the students who come home for vacations studying in Swami's institutions have to do Balvikas classes.
Oh.
And you have to do it daily because it is vacation time. And this was a tradition like that was there for almost 10 years now. So anyone from my little town in Orissa came back during vacations, they had to do Balvikas classes. And the first 15 days, actually the students there were having exams. So now it was time for me to start the classes, and I made that decision that, you know, I will stop watching TV.
Okay.
Because I had really splurged, indulged myself too much. And I made that decision, and I started preparing for these classes. And, to do 1.5 hour, 2 hours classes, you really need to prepare. So, most of my time used to go in conducting these classes. And at the end of it, I asked all these Balvika students, all of you, would you like to write letters to Swami?
Okay.
And they all were very happy. So they made nice little cards and they wrote letters and, you know, and they made a nice envelope and all that. So I thought, you know, I will offer this to Swami. So after the vacation when I came, I was actually a nobody. It's not as if Swami used to speak to me or anything. So, and I remember it was the Vrindavan Darshan, and I was sitting in the third or fourth row. But when Swami came, when he saw me, and I was actually hesitating, but he saw me, he came straight to me.
Wow.
And you know, he asked for that, and very lovingly asked, what is this, and all that, you know. I didn't feel like telling him anything, because to me, just like, he knew. To me, it was like the fruit of... You know, one is curtailing that desire. And second thing, you know, doing something that he will like. And he, and I think as a student at that point in time, you know, he wanted that me to encourage, encourage that effort of mine. So to me, it is like, you know, when you do some good deed, God will start coming to you slowly.
Literally. Very nice.
Literally, He comes to us. And then that's the great advantage of having an avatar. You can experience these things in real time.
Absolutely. Yeah. He is the fulfillment of all your sadhana, and he is the goal of your sadhana, and he teaches you what sadhana is. So, you know, there is this compilation of some very powerful passages from Swami's discourses, which came out as a commentary for one of Richard Bock's films called The Message I Bring.
Yes.
And Kasturi Uncle is actually giving the voice. And that compilation of messages are so powerful. And I was just going through it today, I mean, and some of the passages, I just thought one of those passages I could read out, a very small one. He said, basically Swami is saying, your worldly intelligence cannot fathom the ways of God. He cannot be recognized by mere cleverness of intelligence. You may benefit from God, but you cannot explain Him. Your explanations are merely guesses, attempts to cloak your ignorance in pompous expressions. Okay, so he says, this part is more relevant in the sense, he says, bring something into your daily practice as evidence of your having known the secret of the higher life from me.
Wow.
He says, bring something to your daily practice, means having known me,
yes.
How is it reflecting in your life?
Life.
Bring something into your daily practice as an evidence of your having known the secret of higher life from me. Then he says, show that you have greater brotherliness.
Wow.
Speak with more sweetness and self-control. Bear defeat as well as victory with calm resignation. I am always aware of the future, the past, as well as the present of every one of you. So I am not so moved by mercy. Since I know the past, the background, the reaction is different. It is your consequence of evil deliberately done in the previous birth. So I allow your suffering to continue, often modified by some little compensation. I do not cause either joy or grief. You are the designer of both these chains that bind you. I am the embodiment of bliss. Come, take bliss from me. Dwell in that bliss and be full of peace. I mean, this was a very powerful paragraph, but what Swami is saying here is that, you know, God is just standing and watching. But as you start doing your effort, so yes. Now when I say that Swami, we have known Swami, like your experience, you wanted to bring some change in your life. So Swami says, what change you can bring in your life is speak with more sweetness, yes, and more self-control. And then, you know, bear defeat and victory calmly, that sharanagati, that, yes, surrender. Once you take that step towards him, then he says, okay, let me come close and let me see what this jiva is going through.
But I think, you know, it's not that the Lord was not there close.
Absolutely.
It is just that you begin to experience him now. You have uncovered yourself to feel his presence.
Very true, very true, very true.
To feel his presence and to feel his warmth. And the other thought that came to me, you know, when I was reading this, is, you know, when I was reading about Mrs. Ratanlal, when they came to Bhagwan way back in the 60s, and, you know, she narrates how difficult that journey was, you know, because actually it happens that one day they suddenly decide that we'll go to Parthi, because actually it happens to 2 days hence is her birthday, and then she says to her husband, how nice it would be if we are in Parthi. She says, okay, fine, come on, let's start off. And, you know, they start driving from Bombay. And this is like 60, so they have no clue of the place. So they are asking people on the way. And so it is a long car drive. And so many places they get lost. And finally they come to Penukonda. You know, at that point in time, you didn't have all these roads. And in Penukonda, again, there was some bridge had broken, so they just had to wait there. So she actually just took the car seat out, and you know, they were just sitting there, and she found some table, so she made her husband, you know, sit there, and she tried to fan him, and somehow, you know, spend the night. And then she woke her up at morning, like 1:30. She said 1:32. She said, you know, they wanted to come for 5:30 darshan. They knew Swami used to come those days 5:30. Come, let's go now, let's go now. So they come, and you know, there are no facilities absolutely where the Ganesh temple is today. At that point in time, there was only a well there, and there was only 2 rooms on the right side. And where the State Bank of India extension counter is, there was one dilapidated structure there. So, and the houses which were there are mud houses.
Right.
And so one house, I think, perhaps was Kasturi uncle where he was staying. And at that point in time, it was a Dasara function. And so Mr. Raja Reddy, who used to serve Bhagwan, his relatives had come. So there were already like some 9 or 10 people living in that room. And when Kasturi sir told Swami that, you know, they have come, Swami told, you know, they should adjust with that. So it's like that room, like 13 people. So absolutely so difficult conditions. And, you know, there's no place to have bath. So so you have to go to some place, you know, where there are some flimsy curtains, two, three places, and you have to go and give some money, some few anas, and you'll get a bucket of hot water. And he told, even that was so difficult. So finally, she actually drew water from the well, and again paid some money, got little water for Mr. Ratanlal. And it was so difficult. Finally, she found some place, you know, where he can rest under some tree. They put up something. She made some stones and she tried to cook something, because it was a festival time and she doesn't eat any food. She has to eat her specific food without garlic, onion and all that. So she cleaned the whole place. And she was saying, you know, before that when she went for having bath, when I looked at the bucket, I didn't feel like having bath. And nobody would even have a think of taking a shower. So when and as she was narrating all this, no, and then suddenly she says, it was heaven. And I am like, it's so disjointed. She continuously is telling that, you know, because she said, you know, when they were in Mumbai, this, like they had a mansion, their air conditioned, 60s itself.
Yes.
It was an air conditioned flat. They had the four cars and they had 10 staff. And that is the life with which they are living.
Right.
And here they are not even having water to bathe, no place to stay. And she suddenly said, that was heaven. I was like, oh my God, how to place this? And it, what occurred to me is, you know, see, when people gave up their worldly pleasures for whatever it is, I think that's what we have seen. People who came in the earlier time, they didn't really mind whatever be the inconvenience. And that's why you saw Swami really physically coming.
And he was there.
He was there.
All through day and night he was outside with
them. With them.
Absolutely.
I think that's what, if you see the progression of Bhagwan's proximity, you know, as the conveniences increased,
Bhagwan withdrew.
Bhagwan, the proximity decreased.
Yeah.
If you see that way. The people who came in the 60s, when you listen to their experiences, you feel awe, you know, you're in awe. But if you listen to the living conditions, you feel, oh, I don't think I could have managed here. It's too much. So I think the avatar life gives us such beautiful illustrations. You know, just before we came, the satsang started today, I just opened the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And what fell in front of my eyes is something I thought is very relevant to what we are discussing today. So, what happens is, there is a play that is enacted in front of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. And it's a theatrical performance. And after this function is over, Master Ramakrishna Paramahansa tells to this actor, your acting was very good. If a person excels in music, in singing and dancing or any other art, he can also quickly realize God, provided he strives sincerely. And then Master continues, just as you practice much in order to sing, dance and play on instruments, so, one should practice the art of fixing the mind on God.
Wow.
Similarly, one should practice regularly such disciplines as worship, japa, meditation. In fact, you know, you also refer to this, that Bhagwan is telling there should be some difference in your life on a daily basis. In fact, if you remember the previous discussion in chapter 5, Swami concludes saying that there has to be, if you are a human being, then there has to be continuously a sadhana going on.
Absolutely.
You cannot be a human
without
being
sadhana.
Without sadhana. Sadhana should be something which is, if you are existing, then it means that you are doing some sadhana. So then suddenly Master asks, are you married? Do you have any children? And he says, yes sir, I had a girl who died. Another child has been born. Then the Master says, ah, death and birth, all so quickly it happens. You are so young. And no doubt, you are soon realizing the nature of worldly happiness, the Master says. And the Master goes on to say, you are an actor in the theater. That is fine. But it's a very painful profession. You are young now, so you have full round face. Afterwards, there will be hollows in your cheeks. Almost all actors become like that. They get hollow cheeks and big bellies. And then Master says, what did I say to you about your performance? I found the rhythm, the music and the melody all correct. And then the Master says, the Divine Mother showed me that it was God alone who acted in the performance.
Wow.
She was there in the roles of the players. She's master said that. Now suddenly this actor asks, Master, what is the difference between lust and desire? And Master says, lust is like the root of the tree. And desires are branches and twigs. And then Master says, one cannot completely get rid of the six passions. Lust, anger, greed and the like. Therefore, one should direct them to God. If you must have desire and greed, then you must desire love for God and be greedy to attain Him. If you must have conceitedness and ego, and if you must be egoistic, then feel conceited and egoistic thinking that you are the servant of God, the child of God. A man cannot see God unless he gives his whole mind to Him. The mind is wasted on woman and gold, which many times Kamini Kanchana, he used to refer to Master. Take your own case. You have children and are occupied with a theater. The mind cannot be united with God on account of these many activities. As long as there is bhoga, there will be less of yoga.
Wow.
Furthermore, bhoga begets suffering. And then Master says, it's a very beautiful analogy Master gives. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that the Avadhuta chose a kite as one of his 24 gurus. We have the master who took lessons from nature. The kite, which is a bird, had a fish in its beak.
Right.
So it was surrounded by 1,000 crows. Because of the fish that the bird was carrying in its beak. Whichever way it flew with the fish, the cows pursued it, crying, caw, caw. When all of a sudden the fish dropped from its beak, the crows flew after the fish, leaving the kite alone. The fish is the object of enjoyment.
My God.
The crows are the worries and anxiety. So if you stuck on to any enjoyment, then the crows will come.
Beautiful, beautiful.
The crows are the worries and anxiety. Worries and anxiety are inevitable with enjoyment. They come as a package. No sooner does one give up enjoyment than one finds peace. And Master says, what is more, money itself becomes a source of trouble. Brothers may live happily, but they get into trouble when the property is divided. Dogs lick one another's bodies when they are perfectly friendly. But when the householder throws a little food, then they begin to fight. So I think there are so many very beautiful things the Master says in this conversation. But I think one thing that the Master says here is we have to fix your mind on God.
Right.
See, there are weaknesses. We may have anger, we may have greed, we may have desire, but how to sublimate them? The only way is you cannot really become an amanaskar. It's very difficult to annihilate the mind.
Absolutely.
The moment you annihilate the mind, then you don't exist actually. You actually become one with the Atma. But what you can definitely do is somehow try and sublimate every thought. So we'll move on to the next paragraph.
జగత్ సేవకుడైన సూర్యనారాయణుడు సదా మీ వాకిటి ముందు నిలిచియే ఉండును. మూసియున్న తలుపులను బ్రద్దలు కొట్టి సూర్యుడు లోపల ప్రవేశించడు. ఏలయనా అతడు సేవకుడు. అతడు స్వామి హద్దులను తన హద్దులను గుర్తెరిగి మెలగును. తలుపు తట్టనైనా తట్టడు. యజమాని తలుపులు కొంచెం తెరవగానే సూర్యుడు పూర్ణతేజంతో లోపలికి చొరబడి అంధకారమును పారద్రోలును. పరమాత్ముని స్థితి కూడా అట్టిదే. తన సాయం అర్థించినంతనే చాచిన చేతులతో జీవుల చెంత కనిపించును.
The sun god, who is the universal servitor, is always ready at your doorstep. The sun would not enter a house by breaking the closed doors because he is a servitor. He will always behave mindful of his as well as his master's limitations. He wouldn't even knock the door. However, when the master opens the door even a little, the sun would enter with full effulgence and swiftly dispel the darkness. Same it is with the divine. Only when his help is sought, he can be seen near people with outstretched hands.
So Bhagwan is saying he is the universal servitor. We think we are servants of the Lord.
But in fact, such a beautiful analogy, such a beautiful analogy. I mean, it's a very moving analogy because this is something of a daily occurrence. Of course, in the summer, we wouldn't want to open the door. It's so hot. Mm. But the analogy is so beautiful that he says he's right at our doorstep. And there is a sense of, I don't know, humility is not the right word, but there is that sense of he standing there to serve us.
Yes.
And imagine if God is standing there to serve us, person who knows exactly what is good for us, means we tell a person who is serving us, I do this, do that. But here is a person who wants to serve us, knowing very well what is actually good for us.
Yes. And knowing all that, still he waits.
Exactly.
He says he will not do anything. He knows his limitations. He gives the other person, the master, to behave like a master, even though the master knows nothing about anything that is going around. And the master pretends that he knows everything. Mm. And here is a servant who knows everything, but he is just waiting for the master to order. And only then do the master's bidding.
In fact, when Swami is talking about giving this analogy of the sun god, this analogy again which Swami gives comes to mind. S-A-I.
Yes.
He says, service, adoration, illumination. So, if you see the first, second and third paragraph, it is S-A-I.
S-A-I.
So, if you first indulge in service, that is good action, and that becomes your adoration. And then offer, when you really are out of bounds and you have done all your actions well, then you adore the Lord, you pray to the Lord, Lord, I have done my best, now you take over.
Work becomes worship.
Work becomes worship, adoration. And then automatically there is illumination.
Illumination. Wow. In fact, this is definitely a very, very powerful analogy. And it's very humbling, as you said, because look at the compassion of the Lord.
Right.
And if we see also how much, with what Himalayan patience Swami waits.
Absolutely.
If you'll take the life of every student, take the life of every devotee, you know, even after giving so many clues, so much of love, all that he does, but still he waits. When he will open his heart, you know, when will he give me that little leeway so that then I will enter. But he waits for us to take that first step.
Possibly for lifetimes.
Yeah. But I think, once you do that, then Swami says, no, you take one step and I'll take a 99 steps. That's what it is. But he wants us to take that one step. Because only then probably we'll know the value of what we are getting. We will perhaps also realize the immensity of what we have got.
Absolutely. And, you know, he is told in different ways, like Dr. John Hislop asked him, Swami, why we are not able to get there? Why are we not able to actually realize ourselves, and why are we not doing that? He says, you're just not interested enough.
Yeah.
And then in another place, in the same collection of discourse clips, Swami says, your innate laziness prevents you from the spiritual exercises necessary to discover the nature of God. This laziness should go. It has to be driven out of man's nature in whatever shape it appears. That is my mission.
Wow.
My task is not merely to cure and console and remove individual misery, but is something far more important. The removal of misery and distress is incidental to my mission. My main task is re-establishment of the Vedas and Shastras and revealing the knowledge about them to all people.
Yes.
This task will succeed. It will not be limited. It will not be slowed down. When the Lord decides and wills, His divine will cannot be hindered. So, you know, when the Lord has decided to do this, some people say, oh, have the Vedas and Shastras been restored already? Well, he's waiting for you to restore them.
Yeah, you have to take the first step.
He has given you everything that is there that needs to be done.
Yes.
In fact, Swami was once in the darshan line, Swami had started this regular Veda chanting.
Yes.
And I was also chanting along. Swami came and said, "Oh, you are also chanting Veda. Very good, very good. Don't simply chant. Learn the meaning and then chant."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Learn the meaning and then chant. So, that was then. And then after a few days, Swami was coming around and I was also chanting. And then Swami gave me a very deep look. And he said, he said something very beautiful, very different. He said, "Nee pellik nuve cheppuko Vedam." He said, "You chant Vedam for your own marriage." Okay, now I didn't understand what the meaning of that is. And then I tried thinking of it from different perspectives. And I had no idea. Then when I went to a spiritual master in Delhi, near Delhi, there is a spiritual master in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
So I went to him and then I asked him, "Swamiji, that Swami had told me this sentence." He said, "It's so simple. Why do you come to me with these simple questions?" Then I was like, "Oh my God, I have no idea." Then he says, "Marriage. What is marriage? Marriage is a union where there is a birth, a new life is born." So he says, if you continuously chant the Vedas and contemplate on it, a new self will be born from you.
Oh, wow.
A new self. You will be illumined. You will become Vedang. You will become a part of Veda. You will become illumined. So, you know, when Swami says that he is there right outside the door, and you just have to open the door. That opening the door is this part that we have to actually do. So if we, he's there, he's always there. So if we align ourselves a little bit, and if we are able to align ourselves to the Vedic and Upanishadic truth, I mean, Veda and Upanishad is not something far off from us. It is a part of...
This is Premavaini, is Veda and Upanishad.
This is Veda, this is Upanishad. What else?
Yes.
So he said... Then I asked him, "Does that mean that I have to continuously chant Veda?" He said, "That is your affair."
You can have an affair with the Veda.
That is your affair. It is not my affair. So I have to have an affair with the Veda. But we have to figure out what it means for each of us to actually open the door slightly.
Yes.
That slightly opening the door, you know, when... the sun god is right outside the door. He says, just open the door slightly and he just comes flooding in, removing all darkness. Darkness of ignorance. He says, it just floods your room with light. And another, you know, just before moving on, one more very beautiful analogy which Swami gives is, he says, just because you have been dormant or you have been lazy for 20 years, it doesn't mean that you need 20 years to get illumined.
Yeah.
He says, all you need is just to put on the switch.
Yes.
If a room is in darkness for 20 years,
correct,
all you need to do is muster enough enthusiasm, muster enough faith, muster enough belief in divinity to just put on that switch. So here also he's asking for nothing much.
2 seconds it will happen.
2 seconds it will happen. And he says, just open the door.
Yes.
Just, you know, divert your interest towards that.
Yes.
And start believing that God is. And he is waiting to help you out. That's all.
Wow. In fact, as you mentioned that conversation, I was reminded of one conversation that I had with Bhagwan. And until today, it is something which makes me think at many times. It was a time when I had not got a job, or rather, it was a time when I was not well.
Mm-hmm.
Swami had initially given me a job, and then I was not well, so I had lost that job, and now I was looking for another job from Bhagwan. And there was a lot of prayers going on, and a lot of letters, and everything. So one fine day, Swami comes, and Swami says, "Udyogam kavala."
Mm-hmm.
You want udyoga. In Telugu, job means udyoga.
Job means udyoga. Yes.
Udyogam kavala. I didn't know what to say. Swami said, "Mundu yogam chesko."
Oh.
First do yoga, then udyoga will happen.
Wow.
And I think that is something that has always many times made me think. Because, you know, when you mention about union, that's what it is. Yoga is all about that.
Exactly.
Yoga is all about union with the ultimate.
Right.
Many times yoga is misconstrued as all the asanas.
Mm.
That is just perhaps one minuscule part of
absolutely
what is yoga.
Mm.
And I think that's what he wanted me to open that door perhaps, you know, open that door so that then he will flood our life, flood our hearts with that light. First, the light, as Swami used to say, the light is in you. Then you are in the light. And
right,
then you become the light. I think first we have to take that first step of bringing that light to come into us. I think that is the first step that we have to do.
Mm.
Then one day he will ensure that we become the light.
Mm.
So I think it's time to wind up. There's one more paragraph left. Perhaps we'll do that next time.
Sure.
And dear listeners, please do share with us your feedback about what we've discussed today and any other thoughts that come to you, any other experiences, your own journey in trying to practice a particular sadhana. Swami says sadhana should become something which is as permanent in our life as eating and sleeping and breathing, something that you do mandatorily. So please do share with us your journey. We help each other, hold each other's hands as we move in this journey from I to we to he. Thank you so much for being with us. With gratitude to Bhagwan, on behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, I offer my deep sense of gratitude and loving salutations at his lotus feet for this opportunity to share his message and ruminate on his glory. Thank you so much. Sarah.